listen, think, learn, grow. Listen, think, learn, grow. Live.
This is Metaphysical Universe, exploring science and spirituality with Dr. Douglas Kelly and Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome to the Spirit of Life program for Wednesday, February 24th. My name is Michael Kelly, and I'm here with Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Good evening, Michael. Glad to be here.
Welcome to those joining us live, as well as to those listening in the archives. Spirit of Life is a weekly service and educational program of the International Church of Metaphysical Humanism. Our mission is to explore and empower the human spirit, as well as to explore science and spirituality. In addition to this broadcast, ICMH offers other educational programs that can be found at metaphysicsinstitute.org and tfuniversity.org. Now, we're going to get started with our 9 abbreviated principles of belief, and those are: 1. Do no harm, do right. 2. We believe in the indomitable power of the human spirit. The answers we seek already exist within us. 3. We believe that we alone are responsible for and capable of solving human social problems. 4. We are all equal. One planet, one race, one ancestry, one destiny. Excuse me, I had to mute the mic. 5. We recognize and honor the divine energy that exists in all living things. 6. We are physical and spiritual beings. Consciousness survives death of the physical body. 7. Self-acceptance, self-responsibility, and respect for free will creates self-completeness. 8. Metaphysical education and practical life skills empower the human spirit and enhance the human condition. And finally, 9. Expanding human consciousness leads to human evolution and peaceful coexistence. All right. And I do apologize. Usually I don't have to cough or anything during the intro, but every now and again it catches me. Tonight's topic is going to be a fun one, though. It's going to be time warps and memory.
Time warps and memories, boy, this is a big one. It's a tough one to narrow down, but I think the first thing we have to do is tackle the fact that emotions will warp everything. You know?
Yeah.
And how we have a lot of emotional memory and something that could... Yeah.
We're emotional beings. That's how we perceive things. Yeah.
Exactly. Something could have happened 20 years ago. It feels like yesterday.
You know, so very true. I think one of the so it's been so recent that 2020, it seems like it went by fast, but it also seems like it took forever. It's when the pandemic started. You could say that this March is in the United States is going to be a year for us dealing with it as a pandemic, and really across much of the world. Although I would say that some places were a little bit quicker on the uptake, but I digress. It is just a strange thing of how humans process reality around us and how we store that information. And, we were talking about prior to the broadcast and the different ways of really memory being shaped and morphed by our emotions, especially of the time. And there are so many different branches that we can go down. And I know that, before I've said these big dramatic things about how we're going to definitively put all paranormal things to rest, or we're going to definitively put, any conspiracy to bed. Well, today we are going to finally solve the mysteries of human memory and human data processing. Really the human mind. Go off in a nuanced conversation and be a bit more grounded. But no, we're just going to knock it out. And I think memory is such a difficult thing because it's so real to us, but it's also so malleable. And we don't like to think that. It makes our story less real to us when we admit the truth and the reality of the fact that our memory is not always that accurate or to be relied upon.
Well, I had a couple of realizations when I was raising kids, and I know I've told this story before. Can't remember when, though. But see, there you go. And we had run out of... I was cooking my kids pancakes, and we'd run out of, you know, the store-bought pancake syrup. So I made homemade pancake syrup. And I thought nothing of it. I mean, we did that when I was growing up, so no big deal. And my kid said, "Mom, wow, Mom, this is pretty good. Did you get the recipe from the bottle?" And in that moment, I went, wow, reality. Perceptions of reality. And then that very same day, there was one of my son, he was about 8 years old at the time, one of his little friends had come over, and he had had the flu and was recovering. I know I've told this story before, but I don't remember when. And of course, he had pancakes with us, and he got sick. You know, he went to the bathroom, he was vomiting. He went home and told his mom that, you know, Vicky's pancakes made him sick. And of course, he didn't connect that he had just had the flu and wasn't quite... But the what I thought about, what was so interesting about reality, is that he probably won't eat pancakes for a very long time.
Mm.
And then when he does eat pancakes again, he's going to remember, oh, it's just Vicky's pancakes that make him sick. But then he'll get older again, and there's a memory stored that every time he hears the name Vicky, he'll probably get nauseous, you know? Because so many things collide in our realities,
well,
you know, of how we're processing.
And, you know, the narrative that we choose to believe in. And make no mistake, we always choose to believe in a narrative. Just, we have to do our best to make wise decisions, to try to be based in fact and, you know, observable reality around us and things that are grounded. But we're always, you know, deciding on the narrative that we're going to go down, and that's just what humans do. It's how we started telling stories to one another. It's how we view our own, as you know, I referenced to earlier, the story of our lives, and memory is such a fundamental part of that. And it's
and we all have triggers.
We do, we do, and memory is—it's a survival mechanism first and foremost. I remember, you know, you had mentioned the story of this child getting sick, and of course, it had nothing to do with the pancakes. Well, I couldn't eat pretzels soft pretzels for the longest time because I'd had one and then had come down with the flu, and I got so sick. And it had nothing to do with the pretzel, but just the memory of it, the taste of it, just brought back that, you know, visceral memory of feeling ill, and I wanted to stay away from it. Memory is first and foremost a survival mechanism. It's not designed to always be 100% accurate, and it's not always going to be it's not going to always be a perfect record of our lives. That's why, you know, I found that if I've, and I haven't done this consistently, but when I have tried to journal or, you know, write down things about my day, about my life, about what's going on, I will go back and I'll reread it, and it'll be different, you know, than I perhaps remembered it. And it always strikes me as odd that that's the way that life works. And it's just it's such a fascinating thing, the human mind.
Well, you know, I'm a real Malcolm Gladwell fan. I know there's controversy, but I like the guy. And I think he has a lot of really wise things to say. And one of the things in Blink, one of his first big hits, was about how we can't trust that, you know, we're so polluted, we can't trust that first instinct or first feeling when we go in a room. And for example, you know, you walk in a room and you say, oh, I've got a really bad feeling here. Well, it could be that there's a yellow wall and you had a trauma as a kid when you're like 3 years old and there was a yellow room.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know? And because we have those other triggers now that are in the way of our otherwise good perceptions or sensory ability. So we have to be very self-aware about what we're feeling, what's our own issue versus what I'm looking at, is that real? see, because things get distorted. And that was really profound. If people ever think everybody should read the book Blink, but it came out many years ago now.
Really? I thought it was rather recent. Well, no. Not like a couple of years ago, but... Yeah, well, then again, I think things in 2000, well, this is going to be relative for everybody. But for me, I still feel like 2008 was just, you know, not that long ago was right.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, it doesn't seem like it was that long ago that Barack Obama was president. But it's been, you know, 12 years plus. And it also felt a different kind of eternity for a while there. But it's, again... How do we process time in our perceptions of it? You know, we could always throw out the cliche, time flies when you're having fun. Why is that?
Putting
you on the spot. I mean, I don't really know. I think it's because more of our sensory input is being used up. So we're not sitting there thinking and paying attention to the passage of time.
Well, I think, too, that there's a really interesting thing that occurs when you're very young, and I know with grandkids, and I see it in, you know, I see a kind of a mirror. I remember that feeling of when you're 10, 12, 14 years old, and you can't wait for Saturday.
Right.
I mean, Wednesday to Saturday is like forever, you know? You can't wait for Saturday. And now it's like, okay, I know what I have to do Saturday. Oh, yeah, that's going to be fun. And like, it's there.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I know that generalized psychology has explanations for this and how we have a process of information and time. And, you know, our brains are busier and our bodies are busier when we're young versus when we're older. And it's very true. When you get older, time is so warped. My second daughter having a 39th birthday, I went into a tailspin for a minute, and I went, whoa, how come when I think of her, I still see an 8-year-old?
Yeah.
You know, and that image, what's impacted. Somebody tells me about their child and how old they are now, and I still remember them when they were 5 years old. So, you know, we have these imprints and these very special imprints in our minds that I often say it's like doing an emotional catch-up.
Yeah.
You know, it's got to catch up with ourselves somewhere in there. But time does change. Our perceptions of time change with age and maturity.
And
but that doesn't mean we don't have those triggers. You know,
absolutely.
Still those emotional triggers.
I remember as a child the school day going on and on and on. I remember thinking about everything seemed to last longer. The school day would last longer, but also the time away from school would last longer. Everything, I even remember watching a clock and it just seeming like the seconds were going slower as they went around the clock face than they do now. I'm looking at the clock, my watch, and I'm watching the second hand go around, and I'm thinking this watch must surely be broken. Seconds don't go by that fast, do they? It's just strange. Everything is moving faster the older you get. And I think it's, you know, the more context
perception
we have. Exactly. Yeah. We have more time to look back on. We've had more time to go through life. It just is something that you adapt to, and things go quicker and quicker, especially if there isn't change. Mm. If things are relatively the same in your environment, your house, things like that, the same kind of group of people you're with, then time can go by very quickly because things aren't really changing. But if you move from scene to scene to scene, I think that does also distort the perception of the passage of time.
Well, I know that Dr. Stephen says in the chat, time slows down when one's doing chores, it seems. And, you know, I was thinking that the other day. I was thinking, you know, okay, I'm in a vacuum. I've got this list of chores to do. And, boy, I'm tired by the time I list it in my head. Mm-hmm. And I think, oh, this is just going to be a big ordeal. But, you know, when I go do it, it takes me 10 minutes. And I go, now, what was all the fuss about? That just takes 10 minutes.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
So it is a warp. But, you know, I think that there is something to be said for collective consciousness and time and universal time. And when you tune in outside yourself and feeling like things are spinning faster, life is moving faster, people are vibrating faster. Do you know? Mm-hmm. Everything is busier. when we're that occupied, so the psychology of that is that when we're all this occupied, time just goes by in a blur. So, but there is that, you know, that other, take it to the other realm, so to speak. I really think that time is moving quicker. At least I feel that at an energetic level. And so that's going to distort our realities and our, you know, the kind of connection to memory.
I think. Absolutely.
I
was going to just ponder, you know, what would it have been like when you didn't have the measurements of time that we do in the, you know, relative modern era with clocks, and you always know what time it is. There's a clock everywhere around, on your watch, on your phone, on your computer, everything, the TV, everything has a clock, and you're always constantly reminded of what time it is. However, in the ancient world, of course, you know, you would know by the position of the sun and, you know, how light it was outside and things like that, but I don't think you were so attached to the passage of time, necessarily, as we are in the modern era. And I base that on absolutely nothing, because I only remember this one life and I haven't existed in past centuries. But that is something I think about, too, is perhaps the reason that things are going faster and faster as we're more digitally occupied, you know.
I agree. Wendy just said, I think I need to go to the middle of nowhere and just read a book. I bet time would move slower.
I think you're right.
I think reading the book wouldn't alter the time, but being in the middle of nowhere would alter your perception of time.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, that be here now, you know, we mentioned that last week, and that I remember, or the week before, it's that be here now. When you're more present, more in the moment, time tends to feel a little more tangible and real. You know, it's like my brain isn't over there, well, I'm over here, and those kinds of things. But, you know, where I'd like to move in this conversation to, Michael, which is partly why this topic came up in the first place, is the Mandela Effect. I find this is completely fascinating. But for those who aren't familiar, I'm just going to read this thing. I Googled this so I could read it to you. In 2010, the shared false memory phenomenon was dubbed the Mandela Effect by self-described paranormal consultant Fiona Broom in reference to her false memory of the death of the South African anti-apartheid leader Nelson Mandela in prison in the 1980s. He actually died in 2013 after having served as president of South Africa. Now, that prompted her to be more observant, and then talking to other people, and lo and behold, there's this shared memory of, yes, he had been martyred and died in prison. And so from there, it's been this, you know, 10, 11 years now of this chain reaction of lists of things that people remember differently. And of course, the most common ones are the Berenstain versus Berenstain Bears, you know, those kinds of things.
It's because I think, remember phonetically. And I think a lot of people, you know, said it one way versus the other.
And that could be.
In fact, I never watched the show when I was a child or anything like that. It was never really part of my life. But I can never remember what the real one is. If it's Berenstain.
There were books.
But which one is the actual, the real name of it?
Honestly, I read them to my kids, and I remember them as the Berenstain Bears.
Berenstain instead of the Berenstain.
And now, of course, they say, no, it's always been the Berenstain Bears. You know what? I'll give that up. You know, where my memory might be a little wrong, okay. There's different ones like Jif versus Jiffy, Fruit versus Fruity Loops. You know, there's a list of these things. But where I started getting really stuck was other people who may have died and they didn't. And,
right.
You know, those things. But where I really, it tripped me out was the biblical passages, and this is what I mentioned in a previous show about being a borderline dyslexic, memory, it's really, really hard to impression on your brain to recall things. It takes a lot of repetition and brainwashing and pounding into your head to remember things. And, of course, being, you know, Lutheran and in the United Church, in the Anglican Church, I have a great uncle who's way up in the, you know, is a bishop in the Anglican Church. And I went to Anglican Bible camps and you name it. You know, I mean, it was pounded into my head. There's many biblical passages that are completely different from what was put into my brain, though. Like there, I said, wait a minute, and I'm reading this stuff online. Whoa, I have a little collection of Bibles. I go and I pull out all these Bibles, and they're all saying this now. I went, no. I am so messed up right now about this. Because in my reality, what I was memorizing as a child, to recite these passages, to sing those songs, you know, it was, man, I had to get that right. Mm-hmm. And I had a very strict upbringing. So that's imprinted on me. And this is where I got really confused about the Mandela effect thing. You know, there's something to this.
Because it wasn't just a different translation or a different version. No. It was a fundamentally different message.
Oof, totally different message. And many different messages. I said, that is not what I remember. So what seems to be, and this is kind of what I deduced, is that many of these so-called passages in the Bible today are more contemporized. It's a contemporized understanding of language and for a contemporized audience. And I thought, now, when did somebody rewrite all these Bibles and send these, you know, kind of teleport new ones into my house?
We have a new conspiracy, you know, going now.
So,
well, it's obviously the New World Order, but go on.
No, I don't know. I'm saying energetically, it is entirely possible where there's been a fold.
That's something that I would definitely, you know, put stock into. I think that I've never had an effect so much in the idea of the Mandela effect, but the notion of, you know, things being different, things feeling off, things just aren't quite right. You know, I felt that before. And further, it, when you think about the very likely complex, you know, orchestration of the multiverse that goes on all around us, and yes, perhaps having different places where things might be off a bit. It's kind of just become a common joke amongst the family and some of my friends, where if something isn't the way you remembered it, you just kind of joke that, the universe shifted, or I'm in a different universe now. Oh, well.
Yeah.
Move about your day.
Well, you know what really hit me recently was Jim Nabors, who played Gomer Pyle in, you know, the Andy of Mayberry, you know, that show.
Mm.
Jim Nabors only died like a year or two ago, apparently. In my reality, he died in the late 1880s. And I distinctly remember this. Like, this is so crazy. And I remember it because he was one of the first actors to come out being gay. And he died of AIDS in the late 1980s. And I know, my heart broke, and I thought, wow, what a life, you know, when the message he brought, you know, what sad day, you know, the AIDS, this pandemic. You know, it was really, it really affected me. And, of course, I thought he was such a profound voice, the talent, amazing. Could he ever sing? But then I'm reading the news a year or so ago, and he was living in Hawaii and died at the age of 91. And I go, what? What? No.
Well, and let's have a little fun with the idea of the Mandela effect, too. What if it's not so much that we're actually physically changing realities, but we've talked about this, I think you specifically, Dr. Unner, have talked about this in the past, about our minds being entangled with other universes. I recall Dr. Stevens' comment that that deja vu was, you know, different realities intersecting. And if we do have a quantum entanglement with a different version of ourselves along a very close, you know, kind of multiverse trajectory, is it, it's not beyond what is possible to think that we could, you know, perhaps exchange memories or you know, senses of reality on little things, you know, things, well, and big things too. If we're talking about Bible passages changing and fundamental childhood memories being, you know, different, and that's something that I think you need to be able to experience to truly understand, you know, that kind of perception.
Well, I've seen some pretty odd things in my life, and a good number of years ago, living on a farm in Alberta, and the guy across the road, there's a big bang, and I run over there, and something had blown in his electrical system. And in the short story of it, he showed me, he said, look here, there was stuff that appeared in his yard that wasn't his, and things that he had not had. It's like it manifested out of nowhere. And I went, wow. And he and I would talk about metaphysics and different experiences that he had had, but he said, you'll get this. I can't tell my kids this, he said, but you'll understand. Where did this come from? I went, ooh, another reality. And it's, so I've seen, I've got quite a number of stories like that where something appeared. Okay, that didn't belong to me. <You know? laughs> I mean, where did that come from? One thing is, I had had horses and animals at the time, and a friend was visiting. We went out for a walk in the back field, and I had just been out there checking all the animals earlier that day. But when we went out for a walk, there was an apple, a bright red apple, no scars, no damage, perfectly intact, sitting in the middle of this field. And I said, oh, that's weird. I said, I don't know where that came
from. Well, it could have just as easily been time travelers that left it behind.
Who knows? But I picked it up, looked at it, and I looked at her. I said, I think I'm just going to leave this right here. And so I put it back on the ground, and of course it was gone later. But, you know, animals could have picked it up.
Of course.
But, whatever.
Well, you know, when you don't know, anything is truly possible. But that being said, you know, the only similar occurrence...
There's not an apple tree for miles. Oh. We don't there wasn't even... They have crab
apple trees. Somebody had to bring it. And that's the question.
Appeared out of nowhere.
Right. But the only thing that I've had that would be anything similar along that track was once upon a time, maybe 10 years back, I was going to get in my car, and, you know, I unlocked it because, you know, I always lock my car. When I leave, I'd go back to it, unlock it, get in, and somebody had left a St. Christopher medal on the center dash. But it wasn't like they had prominently placed it. I just noticed that there was a St. Christopher medal in my, you know, little dash area, but it would have been kind of down by the gear shift and things. It wasn't prominently displayed, and I had no idea how it got there. I had no idea where it came from. My car had been locked. I thought maybe, you know, a Christian missionary was, you know, passing them out, but no, how could they get into my car? And, you know, why are they going to do such a masterful job of unlocking and relocking my car only to place a Christopher missile, you know, medal in there? I still have that thing too. But that was, that was the only, just, it came out of nowhere.
Dr. Stephen has said, strange effects when electromagnetic fields cross, causing strange things to happen. And I'm with you on that, Dr. Stephen. I think that there are so many forms of energy we don't understand, and realities and mid-worlds and things that you have these intersections or collisions, and it can cause other stuff to happen. So this is where I mean, the jury's out for me on the Mandela effect. I just observe. Wendy had said, you know, earlier that I can handle the pop culture media or Mandela effect things, but when I have personal things happen like that, it's really creepy.
I think what bothers us so much about the idea of the Mandela effect is that the continuity of our lives is really being challenged. You know, you have a definitive memory from childhood that no longer seems to hold true, which it is jarring because that link is no longer necessarily there, which, just like with reading the stories. And to my shock, they had a family of bears named the Berenstain Bears, and they did not spell it with B-E-A-R, which seems like a no-brainer when it comes to marketing, but that's just me. Who am I? They ran a successful book chain, whomever wrote that, Did a great job. Didn't need my input, but come on. Yeah. It's so easy. It's right there.
You know, Dr. Stephen says more than three dimensions exist, and that's just our reminder that absolutely more than three dimensions exist. And there's this temporariness, he says, of the concept of worldview. Everything is temporary. So that constant changing and waving and waffling. And so I think that the thing is to be open-minded that we are changing beings and we're evolving. Just one thing I would like to bring up, it's a theory and something I have done a little research on and observed, is that every 100 years, humanity seems to do a leap forward in technology, architecture, you know, the list is long. And we go back in 1800s, 1700s, 1600s, there's this, right about the mid-century or thereabouts, it seems to be this leap. And I know that with the Rosicrucian order, they would say that the monks or the priests would only surface every 100 years to recruit, and then they'd go back to sleep, meaning they'd go back into hiding. And it was a very secret order that went on for, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of years. So I don't know that anybody lived long enough to be every 100 years kind of thing, but we could see it almost as metaphorical as well, or some kind of other analogy for their experience. But it would be this every 100 years there's a leap. So I don't know how that's playing in in the last 50 years.
Do you think that, you know, that's something that I would say is certainly accelerated, has it not? I mean, when it comes to things such as architecture and technology and the way things kind of are, the style, you know, the way that you go about your daily life as a human being in a certain era, I think has changed more dramatically in the last perhaps 50 years than you would have seen in centuries prior. And I think I know exactly what you're talking about, though, because each century has its own theme and vibe that kind of tends to permeate many, many decades until it has a shift, like in the late 19th century, where you have the shift into the Gilded Age in North America, at least, I imagine, in Britain and other parts of the Western world, too. And you know, have this is after industrialization. This comes on the heels of that. This is the next step, and it's the next leap forward. But going back to the ancient Egyptians lived thousands and several thousands of years as a relatively they would change and they would evolve and their gods would multiply and they would become more complicated. Their rituals would change. Architecture would generally change. But I do not think, and maybe it's only perceived this way by me because I'm looking back, especially from such a, you know, point far in the future, it does not seem that they changed dramatically from centuries to century, let alone you could see the changes from millennia to millennia, but from century to century it seemed at a more glacial pace. But of course this is also in the prehistory, when written works were not, you know, not available, and people were not writing their histories yet, up until people of ancient Egypt, people of, you know, the Fertile Crescent, Mesopotamia, the Sumerians and things. But
well, Jamil has made a comment that he said, it's been said, another theory, moving into the fifth dimension. Earlier he said there's, you know, people theorize there's 12 dimensions that exist, vibrational frequencies of consciousness. And, you know, so thanks for the chat. Everybody's busy in there making comments. It's awesome. Probably one of the... It made me chuckle, Wendy, when you said the hood on my boyfriend's Jeep is black and for 3 days it was not. And I have had odd things like that happen also. And I don't know. I mean, we can't necessarily explain it. And understand that science operates on the basis of what's repeatable. Mm-hmm. And these things are often not repeatable to a way that we can say that that was a fact. You should have taken a picture.
Well, and you know, the truth is, sometimes it's going to be our memory, our minds, our memory playing tricks on us. And sometimes, I'd say probably a smaller fraction, but sometimes it's not. And that's kind of the way of life, especially when it comes to the paranormal. You find a lot of things that are, yeah, there's just not a lot of there. You know, there's just not a lot going on, and it's kind of underwhelming, and it's nothing. But then again, there are times when it's not, when it's something more. And it's just important to keep an open mind, but also to stay grounded, as, you know, we've talked about a lot in the past.
Well, you know, we have holograms, we have... Now they can actually teleport things. There's lots of science going on that maybe one day we'll have more information. For
oh,
now,
surely.
We're just a bunch of people talking about weird experiences.
Well, we're either ahead of our time or crazy, but it's going to be a fun ride either way, I say.
It's true.
But
you know, go ahead, Michael.
I was just going to say, it's curious to think about what life will be like if we continue this pace of advancement. If we don't have some horrible, you know, wrench that gets thrown into the works that brings the creativity and the innovation to a standstill, I'd like to see where humanity gets with its, you know, idea of science and knowledge 1,000 years from now. What about 10,000 years from now? What is humanity going to look like 100,000 years from now? Knock on wood that we are even going to get there. Hopefully by then we'd be living
on
multiple planets. Yeah. But the trick is not burning out before we do. But then again, I think that's off topic. Just something that came to mind when we were talking about these different phases of you know, movement throughout the human societies and, you know, technological advancement. I'm kind of floundering here, looking for rescue from Dr. Hunter, but I think we'll...
No, it's okay. I want to thank Jamil for making this comment. He remembers 11 dimensions from the M2 course at IMHS, but he also took a class one time and it talked about the 12 dimensions. So, you know, again, these are theories, and we have to keep it in mind. When I was younger, I liked to grasp new thoughts and say, okay, I believe that. Yeah, something else come along. Okay, well, maybe I believe this. And now I kind of felt more comfortable not believing in anything. Except my own reality and my perceptions of reality and my experiences in reality. And that's good enough for me. I hear voices in my head.
Talking about perceptions of reality, we could delve into, and this is a topic for another broadcast, but how, you know, things change when directly observed. I'd have to refresh myself on the exact study done. I'm sure those listening might recall it, where molecules behave differently when under observation than they do when simply being recorded by a passive device. And
quantum physics. Yeah,
yeah, it's a fascinating thing. But
we'll do that in a future program, and I think maybe a refresher of M2 would be a good thing. I'll have Dr. Kelly let us have access to those courses again, because it's been a long time since I read that material, but it's really good stuff. It was actually my favorite course in all of the IMHS programs. So we could do that and go through each of these different points and give people ideas on where they can go research. And there's lots of really cool YouTube videos, man.
Oh, yeah, there's a lot of interesting stuff out there. But
yeah.
But
well, Michael, should we get on with it?
I was just about to say.
Names in the chat. And the next segment of our program here, picking cards for people. The Inner Oracle Self-Discovery cards for those who are new listening. Live, we're in the archives. And then we pull out a tarot card, see what the supporting energy is for that.
Usually always such an interesting match.
Well, and it is, and we started this kind of just as an idea, and it's kind of in full swing to tell a story. And these are all things that are symbols that kind of, you know, trigger this other dimensional information. And so far it seems to be working.
And we've had the card keeper, Wendy, who's been tracking things, and it's you know, interesting to see. We're going to link up here and see if we can find any patterns that emerge for different people over time, or even different cards that seem to appear more often than others. But
I think what we did determine is there were so many repeats for a long time that we said we better start keeping track. And then from what I've heard from Wendy in the chat in the last number of weeks, things kind of shifted, and these are new energies. Now, we talked about that at the beginning of the year, of this calendar year, about how we could all feel a little bit of an energy shift. And in keeping with that, we were also talking about everybody's dreaming, restlessness, and lots of dreams. Mine have calmed down. So I'm just interested to hear if anybody in the chat has, they've calmed down also in their sleep patterns. So,
well, I have not.
Okay, but you're still dreaming.
Well, that's such a situational thing, and such a big part of it, but
yeah.
But I digress.
We're just in a different flow of energy. That's what I'm kind of observing in our collective unconscious. So we'll see. You know, we'll see.
I would definitely agree with that.
So we have Michael G. up first. Michael, what have you got from Michael G.?
All right. We have first up wild card number 7, Hope. Hope lives deep within and inspires the human spirit to continue and expand. Hope, in and of itself, does not create life. Rather, hope desires life. Hope is the root of curiosity, interest, invention, and yearning for more. Even when all feels lost and futile, hope is resurrected by a change of beliefs and core values. Safeguard your hope, for it is the first and last failsafe of your existence. Do not promote false hope, nor encourage codependent hope.
Well, in support of that, Michael, I got a 3 of hearts for you. And it's simply, 3 likes to be happy, right? Anything about the 3. 3 likes peace. It likes happiness and joy. And so the 3 of hearts, being the 3 of cups, is celebration. So this is a time, perhaps just a little reminder, of to celebrate in the hopefulness of your life and, you know, kind of taking inventory and maybe doing nice things for people. You know, it's not about false hope. It's about real hope and connecting with others, because that's what the 3 does. 3 wants to just kind of, oh, can't I just be happy today? You know? And so I think that it's just a reminder for you. He said, he pulled the call it card also. He said the 9 of Pentacles, happy, healthy home. So that's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. That's a good support card, Michael G.
3 sets of 3,
you're
too.
Picking, yeah. And so, you know, it's right in line, that reinforcement, that affirmation to you. So, and he says it's resonating for him. So good for you. Awesome.
All right. I think we have Wendy next.
Yay, Wendy.
All right, Wendy, I have number 7, self-mastery.
Right.
7 and 7. It's got to mean something. To know who you are and why you are who you are is self-actualization. To choose and walk your own path is self-determination, giving inner peace. Not allowing others to dictate your behavior is self-control. Remain true to your convictions. This is self-mastery towards the path of self-completeness.
I got the Ace of Hearts for you, Wendy. Ace of Cups and Tarot language. And Dr. Stephen says she's mastered cooking. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
He's a resident cook here. Self-mastery with the Ace of Hearts. It's really about finding and knowing that joy within yourself and who you are. And there are times, I think, that the more awake we become to who we are, we can feel a little bit alone. And what that is our spiritual autonomy. And I think that there's this little bridge that we cross. So feeling kind of human, like lonely, but spiritually really connected. I know there's kind of an irony in that. But knowing who you are and feeling the joy in who you are and being glad for being you. I'm just so glad to be me. You be glad to be you. Nothing can tip you over. You know, that's the thing. A lot of things can irritate you in life. You can go through it, but it's just knowing who you are. And I think that what this is saying for you, Wendy, is crossing that bridge, and you've been doing that, where, you know, it's been a journey, and you just are being you. So do you and keep doing that.
That's a great message.
It is.
Especially for Wendy. Because Wendy, you just being you is going to be, you know, wonderful for everybody around you just by being who you are naturally.
She's going to package her food and send us all taste tests.
That's really what I'm going after. I'm just trying to, you know, charm so that I can get some stuff sent to me in the mail. But I, anyway. All right. And I believe that have Jamil next.
Hi, Jamil.
And let's see what I have. Number 20, deliberate intent.
Yeah, I like it.
The simple act of intention registers your wants and desires with the universal consciousness, which then sets energy in motion for their attainment. Deliberate intent is focusing your intent like a laser, causing you to become entangled with whatever it is you desire. It's not magic. It requires effort. Focus on what you want, not on what you don't have. Release with patience.
Boy, this is powerful, Jamil. The Chariot. That's in the Major Arcana. Again, the tarot is divided into two, minor and major. And think of it as the wild cards of the self-discovery cards. Chariot, envision for a moment somebody who's moving forward in life, but they've got the negative and positive imbalance. It's like you've got control of all the forces. So deliberate intent with the Chariot. Whew. I get kind of, chills when I think about it. It's moving forward. You've got this. So whatever it is that you're doing, whatever you have in line to move forward into, I want to say go quietly. That's kind of what resonates with me. But go powerfully. So when you're powerful and quiet, it doesn't have to be loud. It doesn't have to be profound. It can just be in a quiet force that you're moving toward what it is that you want to create. So, whew, you know, that's big. Oh, I see.
Reminds me, speak softly and carry a big stick.
Yeah. Jamil just wrote, I have some wonderful things ready to manifest from the vortex. Oh, good. There you go. Thanks. And speaking of vortexes, you know, I'm in my Sedona withdrawals. This no travel thing is like really putting a cramp in my life. And so what I do is I go on Google Maps and I take the little guy and I drive around.
Yeah. You can do
so
that.
So I get my little fix there.
You can do that in virtual reality too. I've gotten to use a Oculus VR headset and they have the app where you explore Google Earth essentially in a 3D way. I actually took a stroll down my hometown in the Black Hills in South Dakota. It was very interesting. Wow. I actually was able to find my way from the main street to my grandparents' house just from memory, and that's been, I don't know, 18 years.
So how does that work, Michael? What is this app? What is this thing that you're talking about?
Well, this was in a particular device called an Oculus Rift, or Quest. It's a little VR headset that you can get. And I'm sure that you can do it just with your phone, too, if you have you can find cheap VR setups that you just insert your phone in it, kind of, voila, you have a ready-made thing to do VR on, like, YouTube and stuff like that. But it's very interesting, and it hooks into Google Maps and Google Earth and things like that. So you can kind of see, it's all based on pictures that people have taken all over the world.
Okay.
And also some people that are contracted for Google and things like that. But it was a fascinating trip down memory lane, speaking of tonight's topic.
Oh, I think I want one of those. Yeah. I'm going to have to look into that.
Especially during the pandemic and you can't go out and about it. It's the next best thing.
Well, you know, I know a lot of people like beaches and things. I'm a desert vortex kind of girl and I sure love Bell Rock and all those magical, wonderful little
energy.
Places. Yeah.
The energy draws
awesome.
You there.
But so, you know, a friend, before I'd ever even had my first trip to Sedona, a friend had said, who'd been there many times, he said, you never really leave Sedona. It always walks with you when you've been there. And I believe that. Once you've been to these really special places, it becomes a part of your cellular memory. That's what I want to say. Tying it back to our whole topic tonight about memory, it's very fun.
You know, just going back home, and it's weird. I've spent the majority of my life in the state of Florida, in the United States, but South Dakota, the Black Hills still feels like home to me for some reason. And it's different for different people. You know, my father, I think, thinks of Colorado as kind of his home state, even though he was born in Utah and moved to Colorado later in life. But for me, even when I've gone back as an adult and so I see the Black Hills again, it is majestic. It's, you know, it's a beautiful, wonderful place. It's no wonder to me that it was the, you know, spiritual center of the Lakota people. Mm-hmm. And it's...
Well, you were born there, weren't you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was born in Deadwood.
I think that's maybe because I have... There's in the northern area of Saskatchewan, which is not flat, by the way. Lots of hills and lakes and timberlines. That's where, you know, my people were from. And I feel that same way about it. It's a very sacred place. And, you know, I think maybe there's this genetic connection we have to where we were born. At least maybe a memory of sorts. See? I'm tying it back to memory again.
Yeah. And, you know, I think we had an entire discussion about memory where we didn't even get into genetic memory, really, which is such another facet of it. And you were mentioning, you know, how you feel about something. You referenced Malcolm Gladwell. It could maybe be something that's not even from your life, which is another thing that I had wanted to talk to you about. Is you have these experiences that you've talked about from previous lifetimes. Do those experiences ever tinge? Well, how could they not tinge your perception of reality and of things in the modern time? And it's just interesting things to go down when it comes to memory. And those were a couple avenues that I had thought about, but we never really had gotten to genetic memory and also, you know, how memory can perhaps carry through time, especially if you go through the, you know, idea of reincarnation. But a topic for another time, perhaps. I think we're kind of coming to a close this evening. I don't see anybody else that was looking for a card, and I hope I didn't miss anybody.
Well, thanks to everybody who's been in the chat and... you know, joining in the conversations there, and we appreciate you very much.
We do. I look forward to it. It's a good discussion. Luckily,
this is the last Wednesday of February.
It's
think about that. It's just flying by.
It is flying by. And 2020 took forever to die, and that rhymed. And I did not intend for it to, but it's. What can you say? Life is fascinating. Life is a mystery, and that's life is.
Yeah.
Endlessly interesting, endlessly, you know, there's avenues that we can search and explore. Our curiosity will never be met because life goes on into infinity. Are there 11 dimensions, 12 dimensions? How would you even know if there aren't 13, 14, or 15? It's all based on perception. But these are the topics we like to explore when it comes to metaphysics. Dr. Hunter, I could not ask for a better partner to talk about these things with because
thanks, Mike.
Every time I go floundering, you're able to come in with something interesting to say, and I always appreciate that.
We've got each other's back.
We try. We do. And so we're going to, you know, kind of refine some ideas for next week's topic. We hope that you can join us there. We appreciate
well,
it.
You know, if I can say, just inject this, Dr. Stephen said, injuries in past lives brought forward into the current life. I would really like to explore that next week. Can we do that?
Yeah.
Past life injuries and memory.
Yeah, let's go ahead and do it.
Because I've got some stories to tell of clients and people. Because I, look, even if you're not into reincarnation, this might be something that tweaks an interest for people. So.
And yeah, let's do it. Let's go through that. Maybe talk about some different avenues. And I think we have a lot to explore there. So, looking forward to it. And this is why we always appreciate having you join us live. It's a dynamic experience. We get to chat with you. We get to talk. And we do appreciate those that listen to the archives. We know a lot of you do. We know that you enjoy it. We appreciate that. And we appreciate the feedback we get. If you ever have any ideas, you know, send them in. We'd love to get ideas for topics. It really takes the, you know, workload off of us to think of things. So, we appreciate it. But, all right. Until next week. We hope you all have a great week, and until then, listen, think, learn, grow, and live. Good night, everybody.
Good night, everyone.